Welcome to this Education Scotland podcast on the importance of career education and work-based learning. Exploring this topic with me today are Andrew Ritchie, Lead Officer for Developing the Young Workforce at Aberdeenshire Council, Graham Henry, Senior Partnership and Delivery Manager for Foundation Apprenticeships at Skills Development Scotland, and my colleague Andrew Creamer, Head of Learning, Teaching and Assessment at Education Scotland. Welcome to all of you. Just to set the context for our discussion today, as part of our work on developing the young workforce and curriculum innovation, we've become increasingly aware that well-developed and implemented career pathways and work-based learning offers can actually deliver against a number of key educational priorities, such as closing the attainment gap, the systematic progression of skills, and positive sustained destinations. Because of this, we are seeing an increasing amount of education establishments considering or already incorporating work-based learning opportunities into their curriculum offer. However, it's interesting to note that we are not alone in considering this topic in Scotland. Paul Hurtman from the Rodell Foundation, Delaware, USA, in collaboration with the OECD, is reflecting on career pathways programs globally. And his initial observations are very much in line with what we are discovering in Scotland. In a podcast on this topic with Andreas Schleicher from the OECD, he shares the following insights around that topic with us.
I took a trip to learn about a mix of countries. In particular, I looked at Australia, Scotland, and New Zealand. In partnership with the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or the OECD. The focus was to learn about where we, the United States, are as a nation in terms of how we're supporting our young people to transition from high school or senior secondary to whatever they do next. We framed this work as career pathways, that is, focused career exploration to help young people make informed decisions about what they do after high school. Over the last 3 months, I got a chance to see firsthand what's working in several of these countries. Collectively, I've traveled over 30,000 miles, or more than 50,000 kilometers, to visit these three countries, Australia, New Zealand, and Scotland, and it's been an amazing experience. My project builds on some analysis by the OECD that had several important findings that I think are important to share up front. The first is that while our young people tend to be more educated, have more degrees, they tend to be less skilled, have a harder time finding their careers. And two, that doing work to connect young people to the real world before they leave high school actually really does help them later in life. This project will be the first time that a comparative international study has looked at career pathways. While there has been considerable analysis of some of the vocational education and training models, we know far less about how OECD countries integrate traditional classroom learning with firsthand experiences in the world of work. Right, this mismatch between those in the workforce and the kinds of skills and capabilities needed for available jobs is not new, but it is reaching a new level of crisis. I know in the US, for example, there are 11 million open jobs and 8 million job seekers. The US and EU are investing nearly $1 trillion in green energy, technology, healthcare, and education. But the skills to fill those jobs in those sectors may require developing new training and talent pipelines from scratch.
So we are not alone in Scotland, considering the importance of career pathways and work-based learning experiences for our young people in formal education, and that seems to be for very good reasons. How to best prepare learners for their future pathways with the right skill sets to progress on their career journeys, it's not just a Scottish issue, it's actually a global imperative. But let's focus on Scotland. Andrew, you've been working with a national timetabling group for quite a while now, and you recently released the first of a series of briefing papers headed Realising Parity in the Senior Phase, Learner Pathways. So a topic very close to our heart here. There are a number of examples highlighted in a paper that all focus on work-based learning. Andrew, what's your take on the importance of that topic when it comes to developing the curriculum offer and opening up new future-oriented learning opportunities for our young people in Scotland?
Yeah, Klaus, I think one of the big challenges was how you can integrate work-based learning opportunities into school timetables in the senior phase. What we identified from across the group was there was four basic models to approaching this issue. One was an integration model where you tried to integrate work-based learning opportunities into the school timetable, and that usually focused on things like blocking afternoons and setting your columns up across, for example, two afternoons, and then that way you can align it perfectly so you didn't have to extract kids. The second one was the extraction model itself, which was probably more common in rural areas where, for example, difficulties with transport to local colleges were a problem for trying to integrate into columns. Big downside, I suppose, was when you were extracting kids from their school-based options, then they were missing out on subjects and you had retention difficulties. We also identified a virtual provision up in the Highlands. And then what was probably really interesting, and you'll probably hear a bit more from Andrew Ritchie on this, was what I called the Aberdeenshire model, which is basing the provision around clusters of schools and actually bringing in, for example, college provision into those schools. So it's the college lecturers that are travelling as opposed to the pupils that are travelling. And that seems to be paying dividends up in Aberdeenshire, where they've had relatively high uptake for things like foundation apprenticeships. A couple of other things that we found were some common features that encouraged the uptake for work-based and vocational programmes, one of which was, and it's quite important, was how these options are offered as part of the course choice process. I think where it's been delivered successfully is that the work-based learning opportunities are integrated fully into course choices. That means there are no separate option choice forms. I think as soon as you have separate option choice forms, then you're sending a message to learners and their parents about one set of options being superior to another. Also, there are no separate application processes. We don't ask pupils to apply for higher English. Why should we ask them to apply for a foundation apprenticeship in scientific technologies? Another key thing that came up was trying to align timescales and timelines, so that during the course choice processes, we're not operating with different timescales for vocational options and school-based options. And also just trying to make sure that starting the courses, for example, start at the same time as every other course starts when timetables change. If they don't, I think what learners experience is some dead time, and that acts as a disincentive for learners for picking up these options. A couple of other important things were the significance of communication and information sharing, communicating quite clearly the requirements of work-based learning options, expectations, the type of prior learning that might be useful, messaging that to more widely to parents. So how, for example, work-based learning options sit within the SEQF framework, and also how they're viewed by colleges and universities. But also, I think, quite important, making sure there were proper systems in place to communicate information about learners. So, for example, learners' additional support needs being supplied to colleges and employers, but also trying to ensure that regular information is provided, for example, for things like attendance and progress, in particular when it comes to planning, trying to ensure that where work-based learning opportunities are offered, there are clear roles and responsibilities for different partners in this. There's, if you like, a mindset of collaboration, being solution-focused, taking into account the needs of individual schools, because even within a local authority or a cluster of schools, you get quite a wide variety of different needs from schools, and trying to ensure there are opportunities provided to develop understanding the different pathways through the BGE, and to encourage uptake when learners are making their course choices. I think that big thing about collaboration is really important, and trying to ensure that there's that effective communication, but also an opportunity to collaborate and evaluate the provision that's been on offer.
Andrew, thanks very much. I think there's lots in it. And one of the things that strikes me, you mentioned, is the collaboration there. You've just highlighted that again. And if we want to open up the whole curriculum offer, we need partners on board, don't we? I know schools like Barhead High School, you know, who offer 147 courses in the senior phase, potentially, depending on demand. You can only do that with strong partnerships. Are you seeing issues with that, Andrew, that some schools are struggling to find the right partners, or is it people increasingly becoming creative in that space? Or how's that looking from your perspective?
I think more and more schools are looking at it because, in a sense, there's a variety of other potential benefits. So, for example, you're widening that curriculum offer that's available for learners. You're meeting the needs of a wider range of learners. You're not just offering a range of academic subjects. But it's going back to the original Learner Journey report about some of the benefits of sharing, for example, estates across college and schools. And also the potential benefit, if you've got more learners taking up college options, work-based learning options, that's freeing up staff to further develop your curriculum and widen that curriculum offer. And I think what we've seen and what the timetable group picked up on is a greater willingness to, for example, for schools to work together to align their timetables. And we're seeing that as aligning not just one column, but two or more columns across, for example, the entire local authorities, to try and encourage that greater collaboration between schools and also between schools and colleges and schools and partners such as employers.
Magic. And before I bring in Andrew, one last question. There are also more and more creative timetabling models out there now where people are starting to really explore quite diverse options. Are you encouraged by seeing these kind of things around the country?
Actually, there's real interest within the group of the different practice that's emerging from across different parts of the country. And I think one of the key things from the point of view of timetablers is the opportunity just to get together and share different approaches, different strategies for dealing with things. And I think what we're seeing is more people taking on board these different opportunities and moving away from, if you like, that traditional timetabling model fixed on columns and academic subjects with a slot, if you like, shoved on at the very end for vocational opportunities and integrating those across columns and across provision in the school. And that also is then recognised in the uptake that we're seeing for that wider range of vocational opportunities.
Exciting. It gives me a really nice cue for Andrew Richard to come in, because you've been mentioned in that paper, we've just referred to the Foundation Apprenticeships and your creative way of incorporating this into the timetabling structure, the curriculum offers right across Aberdeenshire. But more importantly, the way you deliver the Foundation Apprenticeships for and with the secondary schools pays enormous dividends to young people and to the wider community. Andrew, do you want to say a bit about this, and what kind of impact is that having at the moment for you, for your learners, for industry, and what kind of broader structures sit behind that? How do you achieve that?
Hi, Klaus and everyone else. I think, as we've just heard from Andy there, the in many ways, the constituent parts of what we're doing, we're already in a system. For example, we felt that Foundation Apprenticeships were the right product, that this is what we'd kind of been waiting for in the senior phase, to try and align our senior phase curriculum with what employers were telling us that they would like young people leaving the school with the skills that they may require in the work environment, the universities and colleges likewise. So we undertook a review, as Andy's highlighting there in the timetabling paper, and there was a number of key barriers to what we were doing, and everything. Aberdeenshire is a very large rural authority with very kind of distinct and varied local communities, and so therefore, actually, as Andy's highlighting, the extraction model simply wasn't working for us, because ultimately what it was leading to was a disruption to individual learning. In essence, doing a centrally delivered foundation apprenticeship, in essence, was 2 days out of school, and the school staff, the parents and pupils themselves were saying it's just too long away, we're missing classes, and that was a major issue. And the other aspect was they were generally delivered over 2 years, the foundation apprenticeships, and we felt that a one-year model was going to be a more effective delivery model, where you could blend the theoretical NPA part of the course, if you like, with a practical SVQ work placement, and the learning from the theory could be brought into the workplace, and the workplace learning could be brought back into the classroom, and so it's proved. So we've certainly seen growth. We became a lead provider of foundation apprenticeships, and we kicked off our first cohorts in June 2019. And we've seen growth from our first year of 208 And we're now delivering almost 1,000 foundation apprentices, apprenticeships across levels 4, 5, and 6, and across 14 of the frameworks. So it's proved a popular option, and we're certainly seeing seeing impact. We're seeing a growth in attainment. We've looked at the curriculum. We've provided a meaningful curriculum for the young folk, because undoubtedly, when you provide a meaningful curriculum, we're seeing the increase in engagement, we're seeing the increase in attendance, and ultimately, we're seeing very significant improvement in outcomes, everything ranging from an increase in attainment, especially for those in lower attaining sections of our pupil cohorts, and we're seeing overall for everyone this last year's data, we've got over 60% increase in the attainment of those who'd undertaken a foundation apprenticeship against those who had not. So positive destinations are up. We're seeing an increase in young people's understanding and demonstration of skills, meta skills. And crucially, and I think this is the important thing, we're seeing how the career aspirations of our young folk, we're providing a curriculum for them in the senior phase, which is then targeted and hopefully pathwayed into the local regional skill shortages, everything from healthcare through to hospitality, energy and automotive and all the rest. So that gives a quick snapshot, Klaus, where we are.
That's amazing, Andrew. Now, you mentioned a couple of things in the passing. You mentioned a meaningful curriculum, and I think what you're referring to is that kind of connection between, you know, the theoretical learning and the practice I've outlined earlier on. So it makes sense to young people to work with employers, but you also provide them with connections for their futures. How does that impact on the local communities? Because I believe the positive destinations then have an immediate impact into the, you know, into the employers that are looking for their new talent coming through. So I think it sounds to me as if it's a win-win-win situation. Everyone wins.
Well, I certainly hope so, Klaus. I think one of the things that we've found with the nature of work-based learning and the beauty of work-based learning is in terms of trying to do everything we set out to do back in 2014-15 with the publication of the Wood Report and so on. And I think what we're seeing is the nature of the foundation apprenticeships is rather, and this is what the pupils tell us, rather than maybe assessing a very kind of narrow spectrum of learning, as and again the pupils would say this to us, that's what they feel with the more traditional academic higher courses, we're seeing the assessment of a spectrum of learning, and it's the value of these SVQ units, it's the understanding from the workplace, from that practical knowledge that's being brought back into and opening up learning. And young folk will often tell us they enjoy learning, and they often say, for the first time I'm enjoying learning. And because they're seeing success, because they're aware of the what they're trying to achieve and they're achieving it, they're seeing it. So as well as the continuous assessment approach, which of course universities are telling us this is the skills in terms of assessment and learning and so on, strategies that they'd like to see, is that wider spectrum of learning, which very much chimes with what we set out to do in the curriculum for excellence. In terms of the positive impact on communities, we're facing in many rural communities some major skill shortages, as the rest of Scotland is, in things like health and social care and IT and scientific technologies and so on. And so what we're able to do is try and provide a curriculum that might help address these skill shortages in the years to come. It's not going to be an overnight fix, but the more young folk are leaving our schools and with career aspirations to work in their local communities and things like health and social care, it can only be a good thing.
It sounds compelling. Yeah. One last bit, Andrew, which I know you are very good at and very keen on, is this designing pathways with employers together. Is that working for you?
Well, it's it it is working for us, because you can see by the levels of attainment and positive outcomes. I think there's a couple of things there. The 71% of our FA delivery, one way or another, is through partners, including colleges, who deliver the things like SVQ elements, as well as some of the NPA work for it. And really, the getting the employers involved has been quite easy. Because we said, right, here is a curriculum we'd like to deliver. Who is best placed to tell us what should be in a health and social care foundation apprenticeship curriculum? Who is best placed to tell us and advise us what should be in the creative and digital media foundation apprenticeship curriculum? Well, the folk who are best placed to tell us that are the folk from the industry, from the sectors. And so what we've been able to do, two-thirds of our FA delivery, the curriculum has been absolutely co-created, in fact, maybe even more co-created by the industries themselves. And so there's a high-quality product, and the industry has been able to influence very heavily indeed the curriculum offer, which allows us to deliver that in our schools, and it allows the young people to really get a flavour of what this kind of learning is and what a career in that particular sector might be. So absolutely fascinating, and as an educationalist, it's just superb to see this kind of work-based learning come to fruition and deliver these positive outcomes for our young people.
That's absolutely amazing. So schools are in many ways injecting the realism and future-proofing their curriculum by working closely with those people who know best and who need the workforce in the future. So I don't know if, Andrew, from your timetabling perspective, if that makes sense. Do you see something like that as well coming through, that there are people working together in that kind of level?
Yep, Klaus, I would agree. I think we're seeing that. There's also something worth bearing in mind as well, is about how this aligns with the Hayward proposals and the aspirations behind the Hayward report. I think that's really important to remember. And just that another aspect worth thinking about, the whole sort of concept of project learning, which in the original Hayward report was learning in context. Well, there's a big context of work-based learning that fits into this really nicely as well.
Thanks, Andrew. I think we've heard from these dimensions. We know it works in a timetable. It's actually quite exciting listening to you folks. Graham, can I bring you in on the broader perspective of the work-based learning aspects around foundation apprenticeships? You've got a national picture on this, and I think you see things coming through from your end as well that really outline the benefits of that and the kind of the bits and pieces that delivers for young people.
Hi, Klaus. Hi, folks. Yeah, I think what we've heard there is really good examples of how it works in the system. And what we have started to try and do is try and understand what the impact of that is more. So we've got quite a lot of research we've been publishing in Skills Development Scotland, including Young People's Careers Ambition. They're all available on our corporate site. But what that kind of research starts to show is what's the impact. And there's a couple of things I draw out, which I think it really started to show the impact of work-based learning for young people in school. Now, we take into account that around about half of young people in school see a lack of confidence and a lack of work experience are the key barriers to them for their future careers. And what we start to see as well, though, is that a journey young people go on from the early stages of secondary through to after a year after they leave school, and when they're involved with work placements or work-based learning, this starts to show them other aspects. So early on in secondary, young people start to think that jobs are just about money. It's just about a good job is a high-paying job. That's it. As they move through the system, we start to see as they come out the other side and they've got more exposure to working with employers, is that they start to place more emphasis on things such as job value, what they enjoy, what matches their skills. What's going to give them a longer term future and the balance. And that's really important. Another aspect we start to see is that meta skills getting drawn out. Again, that experience, that placement, that engagement with project learning, with employers, with the different types of learning environments, starts to let them question their own skills and understand themselves better and how they're going to be more confident, how they're going to have more opportunities to demonstrate that in the workplace or any learning environments going forward. So that diversity of education and a diversity of experience is really important for the young setting young people up for the future, for giving them those rounded skills round about. And one final area really just to highlight though is it does make a difference to different groups. So the people from the lower SIMDs, so SIMD1, we are finding that they have has a greater impact in them than it does in SIMD5. So for SIMD1, what a lot of them will say the biggest challenge for them is confidence, access to opportunities, that the aspects of it. For SIMD5, quite often it won't be confidence, it's competition. So they're already thinking in that space. So that kind of experience can have a greater impact on different groups. And that's something for us well worth us drawing out. What other things, Klaus, I think is really important though for us to understand is the impact that different people and different have on young people. Parents are really, really important. 80% of young people say that parents are the number one influence on them when it comes to thinking about things. Yes, careers advisors are influential. Yes, teachers are influential. But actually, parents are the biggest influence on them by a long way. But parents don't realise that. So it's important that we try and help parents to understand the options for the young people, the impacts of it, the benefits of it, and the importance of the role that they play in their son, daughter's future.
Thanks. Thanks, Graham. I think you mentioned a couple of really key things here. From an education perspective, I think we need to be fully aware of this, making sure that we give young people along the journey already the conversation bits with their parents and the experiences that they can try and have an informed conversation with everyone who needs to be involved in their future pathways. Folks, it's been a fantastic conversation. Thank you very much for all your contributions. Is there anyone who wants to round off?
One final thing I would say, Klaus, I think is worth drawing out that we've seen in a lot of the research is actually a lot of young people in school don't necessarily know about different opportunities, or they don't feel that confident about it. And it's really important that we give them that experience. Yes, by giving them information, but they'll get the knowledge more by experience. So 49% of young people say they have any knowledge or much knowledge about apprenticeships. Now, that means that's a significant amount of people are not fully aware of that opportunity, whether it's right or wrong for them. So it's about how do we get that parity of knowledge, of experience, so as the young people can make the decisions that are right for them. Another thing that we really want to think about as well is that these kind of experiences will help young people in their pathways and the experience that they have. As I mentioned previously, people from the lower SIMDs have less confidence, but they also have much more challenging pathways and progressions than people from SIMDs. They're not as smooth. They can have more jumps. And building their confidence, knowledge, experience will help them to manage through those types of experiences that they're going to have.
Yeah, and that's something that, Andrew, I think you're seeing as well, particularly for young people at SIMD. These kind of practical experiences have a real impact. And when you were talking there, Graham, in my head was the saying that always applies for me. You hear, you forget, you see, you remember, you do, you understand. So it's that kind of bit that we need to get across to young people. Andrew, Jima, do you want to come in for a thought there?
Yeah, just building on something that Graham said, and I think Andrew mentioned earlier. I think when you're providing a much more diverse curriculum, it's based on a wider range of opportunities and work-based opportunities, you're providing a more relevant curriculum, and the opportunities that provides to engage a wider range of learners. And not sort of going back to the timetable group, but my own experience in school, developing the curriculum in the school that I was in, we saw better attendance, we saw improved behaviour, but also really significantly, we saw improved academic performance as learners recognised the significance, for example, of attainment in subjects like English and maths, because that's what employers were looking for. So I think you've got an all-round series of benefits that moved beyond just the potential benefits, the skills development, the meta skills and so on, from the placements themselves, and there's a whole range of potential benefits for schools and for learners.
Thanks for reminding us of that, because actually Andrew Rich from Aberdeenshire has discovered exactly the same thing, this added value, this re-engagement in other learning, and then the uplift on the academic performance in other areas, I think is something that you are aware of as well, Andrew.
We've certainly seen added value, as you say, Klaus, and in much of what we're finding in terms of our evidence of impact chimes very much with what Andy was saying there. We were able to demonstrate clearly through insight analysis the impact on our attainment. We were, as well as the impact on individual attainment, it was quite obvious that we were having an impact on reducing the poverty-related attainment gap. But there was actually another dimension to it, which was more difficult to capture. And this was the wider impact. And the best way I can maybe describe this is if a young person was maybe doing, let's say, the Health and Social Care Foundation apprenticeship, they were going out in their placement and saying, right, I really want to be a nurse. They were coming back to their schools and saying, right, I want to be a nurse. What do I need to become a nurse? And the teachers or guidance teachers, whoever, was saying, right, Foundation Apprenticeship in Health and Social Care, stick in with that, higher in English, National 5 in maths, another higher, let's say biology or whatever it might be. And suddenly there was a renewed focus. And as Andy's saying there, suddenly things like higher English and Nat 5 maths became far more important to the youngster, because there was now a clearer alignment with their career aspiration to what their next step might be. And that was crucial. So we were trying to find, anecdotally, the pupils, the parents, and the school staff were all saying they were seeing this increased engagement beyond the work-based learning, beyond the foundation apprenticeship. So how do we capture that? So what we did was we looked at the 20%, lowest 10 and 20%, the middle 60%, and the upper 20% of attainment in the insight analysis. And we were then able to use the S4, let's say the lowest attaining 20% in the S4 as the benchmark. And we would then we followed them through into the ones that had undertaken a foundation apprenticeship. And what we have been able to demonstrate clearly, and it's very much backs up what Graham was saying there, is the biggest impact, the most significant impact on young persons' attainment is coming with those from the lowest attaining 20% in S4 when they get that more meaningful curriculum. And absolutely, it then leads into greater engagement, greater attendance, and wider attainment. So fascinating stuff seeing that come through. And then the going hand in hand with that, it's part of this whole same thing, we very much are seeing an increase in the confidence of young folk. As in terms of the confidence within themselves, but also their confidence in their learning and their enjoyment of learning. And that's really, really important. And so therefore, our approach has been very much a universal offer to all. The development of the meta skills coming through very clearly year after year. Young folk are telling us the skills that they're developing through their work-based learning and the foundation apprenticeship would be focusing, adapting, initiative, communicating. And it's really important we've got these very practical meta skills development within them, and these will hopefully mean that they navigate through life and can draw upon these skills that they've been able to develop up through the foundation apprenticeships.
Many thanks for all your contributions, gentlemen. Very much enjoyed considering the implementation and impact of career pathways and work-based learning, both on learners as well as the wider community, and of course also the employers and the economy. Good to hear that people are considering the inclusions of this in their future curriculum structures and developments. Andrew, you've outlined that very clearly to us. And it also in our conversations is great to notice the potential impact that this can have on the educational outcomes for young people overall. If you want to know more about this topic, folks, you're interested in that, we've got two webinars coming up. One on the 17th of January, 4 o'clock, it's a twilight session to consider that kind of impact of work-based learning in more details. We've got Oban High School represented. We've got Andrew again telling a bit more about this. We also have West Lothian College on that session. And the second session on the 21st of February, really looking at the practicalities of how we implement that into our future learning structures. So if you want to find that, that's on Twitter and Education Scotland's website. And we would love to see you in person for these sessions there. Andrew Ritchie, Graham, thank you very much for your contributions and sharing your insights today in the afternoon. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this podcast.